as humans, are hardwired to return a favor. Companies and marketers can put the power of reciprocity with growth experiments that center around giving before asking for a commitment to purchase. Costco is a master at applying this principle, making in-store samples and demonstrations a highlight of the shopping experience at the chain. Company spokesman Giovanni DeMeo has said that some of the product demonstrations have increased purchasing by as much as an astonishing 2,000%, in part because when customers feel that they have received something for free, whether it's a slice of pastrami or a tutorial on how to use a state-of-the-art veggie peeler, they feel compelled to reciprocate with a purchase. The HubSpot marketing grader that we discussed earlier uses this principle as well. It gives you a robust analysis of your website for free, because growth experiments have shown that you are likely more inclined to talk to a HubSpot salesperson, subscribe to their emails, or recommend the brand as a result. Giving away webinars, videos, white papers, and other content can also trigger this reciprocity, as can free upgrades to shipping costs and timing and on-the-spot discounts for e-commerce. In fact, the freemium model in SaaS is also a take on reciprocity, in that they are giving a set of free features away with the expectation that some people will upgrade as a result of their successful use and need of the product. The principle of commitment and consistency. Recall that Cialdini found, once we've taken an action, we are likely to take another one that is consistent with that previous action. It's why car salesmen are instructed to get potential buyers to initial a term sheet with no binding obligation, because the act of initialing one piece of paper makes you more likely to sign the purchase documents for the car later in the process. This same idea is used by the eyeglass retailer Warby Parker. Its home try-on program lets prospective customers select and receive up to 5 sets of eyeglasses to try on before buying. Once you have a pair of their glasses on your face, it's unlikely you won't move forward with the purchase. You can use this principle to drive revenue by asking users to make small commitments upfront to lead to larger purchases later on. Amazon uses this principle with their wish list feature. They know that when you add books or items to your wish list, you are more likely to buy the item, because you have already acknowledged your desire to do so. As another example, sending a customer who recently purchased something on your site a quick follow-up with an incentive to make another purchase can lead to additional purchases from people who want to be consistent with their earlier purchase decision. Even asking a recent shopper if they'll buy again from you in the future can be enough to trigger additional purchases down the line. The principle of social proof. The desire to follow social norms or conform to the behavior of others is among the most powerful motivators to purchase. Cialdini highlights the case of Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, England's version of the IRS, who in 2009 faced an incredible amount of unpaid debts from citizens behind on their taxes. Their collection efforts, in the form of mailings, were proving ineffective. So the HMRC teamed up with Cialdini's co-author Steve Martin to try a new approach, leveraging the power of social proof that proved incredibly simple and effective. The HMRC added a single sentence to the collection letters to a pilot group of delinquent taxpayers, a statement of the fact that most UK residents pay their taxes fully and on time. As a result, collections jumped from 57 to 86% in the pilot group, which added up to collections of £560 million out of the outstanding £650 million of tax money. Simply reminding people of the social norms around paying their taxes produced a staggering improvement. Too many companies get social proof wrong, featuring unbelievable or non-specific testimonials to try to persuade customers to buy higher-priced items, such as a restaurant that might include a testimonial on the back of their menu like, "Best steak in town, love it." Yet this can actually dissuade shoppers from ordering that higher-priced item by raising doubts about the authenticity of the claim. Conversion expert Angie Schottmuller identifies 7 core factors that make reviews and testimonials effective, for which she coined the acronym CRAVENS, which stands for Credible, Relevant, Attractive, Visual, Enumerated, Nearby Points of Purchase, and Specific. Flower delivery shop DeFlores drove revenue higher when they added a testimonial that met these simple criteria to their e-commerce site. The original version of the site displayed some text-based testimonials, but after discovering that new visitors didn't know much about their brand, they replaced those testimonials with an image that celebrated the company's 600,000 Facebook fans. Turned out that showcasing their large social following in a credible, relevant, attractive, enumerated, visual way resulted in a 44% increase in revenue from shoppers who likely felt in better company shopping on a site with so many happy customers. One monetization opportunity for growth teams is to increase the visibility of social proof along the conversion path to purchase. Adding testimonials, the logos of prominent customers, the results garnered from users of your product, and the number of people currently shopping or booking on your website are all ways to validate the decision-making process of your customers with information based on what other users have already done. For example, ModCloth, the women's online retailer, uses their Be the Buyer program to let users decide which styles and sizes of clothes to sell. But they also indicate these items with a badge to indicate to shoppers that these are buyer-approved items. Those with the Be the Buyer badge sell at twice the rate of other items on the site. The principle of authority. Research shows that we are more likely to trust experts and people in positions of authority than an average person. Even the inclusion of subtle language that indicates authority can increase purchase behavior, as Kaya Skin Clinic proved when they generated a 22% increase in sales simply by adding the word expert to their call to action on their website, which then read, "I want an expert opinion, sign me up." The principle of authority explains why 1 out of every 4 television commercials features celebrity endorsements, and why brands founded by celebrities, like Jessica Alba's Honest Company, have been so successful. Depending on your industry and budget, celebrity endorsements may be out of scope. But each niche has influencers and tastemakers who have credibility within the audiences you're targeting. Growth teams can experiment with featuring such influencers to drive improved revenue growth through the principle of authority. The principle of liking. We also buy more when a product or service is recommended by people we like. Airbnb leveraged the principle of liking when they re-engineered their friend referral program by including a photo of the person sending the referral with the invite. The addition of this personal touch was part of the reason why their new referral program saw a 300% increase per day in signups and nights booked from friend referrals to Airbnb. If you're looking for experiments to try to leverage the principle of liking, consider using images of real people, like your salespeople or your customers, on your website. In addition, friendly, welcoming copy on your landing pages can trigger a similar response. Recall how Nasty Gal's founder, Sofia Amoruso, took poorly selling items and styled them on the site's most popular models to stoke sales. This is liking in action. The good news is that many of these changes don't require massive technical overhauls. They can be quick experiments the growth team can run to generate higher volume or purchases or to drive people to higher priced items. The principle of scarcity. When we feel like we're going to miss out, we're more likely to take action. Booking.com uses the principle of scarcity to increase revenue exceptionally well. The travel deals site shows deals that you've already missed, letting visitors know that these deals won't be around forever. They also show how many other people have booked the deals today, how many rooms are left at the hotels, and even how many people are looking at the listing at that moment. Another trigger that says to customers, you better buy now before it's too late. Using scarcity as a purchasing tactic is about triggering the fear of missing out, or FOMO, in your shoppers. You can run experiments that limit the time of promotions, show remaining inventory when there are only a few of each item left, limit the number of appointment spots available to book through for consultants, or limit the number of people who can take advantage of a special offer. When something is about to sell out, is hard to get, a deal is expiring, or your customers may miss out one way or another, you're more likely to make the sale than otherwise. Having now made the full circuit through the four key types of experimentation for driving growth, acquisition, activation, retention, and monetization, in the next and final chapter, we'll explore how vital it is for growth teams to continue to work on all of these fronts to avoid falling into the common trap of growth stalls. Lulls in growth that can, and often do, spell disaster, even for leading brands. Remember, growth teams should never rest on their laurels. In a twist on the old adage, you snooze, you lose, today's hyper-competitive business environment assures that if you stall, you will fall. Chapter 9. A Virtuous Growth Cycle. As we've seen throughout the book, driving growth is a job that is never truly done. The breakout companies that sustain their success are those who constantly push for more, leveraging their success, capitalizing on new opportunities, and creating a virtuous cycle of growth. In 2017, the Facebook growth team will celebrate its 10-year anniversary. Going from a team of five, tasked with reversing the social network's slowing adoption, to multiple teams across numerous initiatives, responsible for sustaining the seemingly unstoppable growth of the largest social network of all time, the growth team has been instrumental to Facebook's extraordinary growth over that decade, breaking all preconceived notions about just how large an online community could become. The company now serves more than 1 billion people per day, with plenty of room for further growth around the world, and untold opportunities yet to be discovered for increasing revenue from that massive user base. Moreover, the unrelenting growth, both in the number of users and in their level of engagement, has been the fuel of the company's strong support among financial investors and the public market, who have rewarded it with plentiful capital to fund innovation, including long-term moonshot bets like the company's foray into virtual reality with the purchase of device maker Oculus, and its Internet Everywhere initiative, which includes an audacious plan to deliver wireless internet to remote corners of the globe with solar-powered drone aircraft. That's what we mean when we talk about a virtuous growth cycle. Whether yours is a growth team of five people or 500, and whether you work for a company valued in the millions or one that is still getting off the ground, you too can follow their example of continuously and relentlessly experimenting on all fronts with new ways to push growth. Avoiding growth stalls. One of the greatest threats to long-term success is when companies aren't vigilant enough about responding to the changes in their market, whether it's by failing to spot product or channel fatigue, acknowledge new competition, make needed updates to products or marketing adjustments in a timely fashion, or embrace new technology coming online. One prime example of the dangers of such complacency is Skype, which was once massively successful by any measure, but which failed to continue to innovate after its acquisition by Microsoft. As a result, it is now rapidly losing ground to mobile apps offering chat service, such as Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp, and the fast-growing group chat company Slack that is sweeping the corporate world. Where did Skype go wrong? Put simply, the product and executive teams failed to grasp the appeal of mobile messaging and perceive how rapidly mobile phones and tablets were being integrated into workplace communication. Such lapses in strategic vision and product innovation often lead to a company experiencing what is called a growth stall, a phrase coined by Matthew Olson, Derek Van Beaver, and Seth Vary of CEB, a leadership advisory network. These slowdowns in growth are often unforeseen, sneaking up on companies without warning, and they happen both to major established brands and to once fast growth startups. They are devilishly hard to predict, and many ironically follow a period of strong growth. Reporting in the Harvard Business Review on a major study of growth stalls they conducted, Olson and his colleagues cite the case of the iconic brand Levi Strauss, which hit a historic high mark of sales in 1995, reaching revenue of $7 billion. But then, starting in 1996, saw a decline in sales so precipitous that by 2000, revenue was down to $4.6 billion, a 35% drop. Other major brands the authors identify as having suffered stalls include 3M, Apple, Bank One, Caterpillar, Daimler-Benz, Toys R Us, and Volvo. Though one might think that such abrupt reversals must be due to some dramatic disruption in the market, the study showed that often stalls are not caused by the entrance of a bold new competitor or a disruptive innovation, like smartphones, but by chronic failures on the parts of companies to closely monitor customer satisfaction and to zealously look for early warning signs of disaffection. Often, erosion of customer loyalty has been going on for years, but the company has failed to perceive it until it's too late. Stalls are also often caused, the authors report, by companies becoming overconfident of having secured a premium position in the marketplace. That is to say, they detect competitive threats, but don't take them seriously enough. This false sense of security tends to lead to a failure to innovate aggressively, making only incremental improvements in existing products, rather than pursuing new market opportunities for growth. Even the most vigilant of product teams can be ambushed by breakout companies that introduce a new technology or apply a new one in an innovative way. Conversely, stalls can occur because companies lose focus on their core products or services, becoming distracted by the launch of shiny new products, bells and whistles extensions, and making an entry into new markets. The drain of talent from a company can also lead to stalls, as stars who have been instrumental in driving growth defect, leaving the organizational machinery inadequate without their superior vision and drive to sustain vigorous growth. These pitfalls are not limited to product development. Complacency and failure to innovate in marketing efforts can also lead to massive slowdown in growth. One common growth stall occurs when companies become over-reliant on particular channels, which may be losing their effectiveness, as marketing channels that once brought in endless streams of new customers mature, those streams can quickly become mere trickles as a result of anything from new competition to changes in consumer behavior, often brought about by technology, like the shift to mobile, to new rules that govern the channel. Online publishers, like Upworthy and BuzzFeed, are a prime demonstration of the latter example. These brands suffer from an uneasy reliance on Facebook's newsfeed algorithm, which they use to drive a great deal of traffic to their sites. Each time Facebook chooses to tweak the rules for the stories they show to users, the publishers hold their collective breath, as even a tiny modification to the newsfeed algorithm could easily cause a huge drop in their readership, and thus advertising dollars. Some companies have made the mistake of relying so heavily on the Facebook newsfeed that such a change has been life-threatening. For example, Viddy, a video app that rose to a $370 million valuation, relied so much on Facebook for promotion and distribution to users that when Facebook tweaked the rules of its newsfeed algorithm in a way that resulted in much lower visibility of the app on the site, Viddy saw a rapid drop from 50 million users per month to less than 500,000, and its developers ultimately shut down the app as a result. Facebook isn't the only culprit in such channel volatility. Many channels institute regular changes in rules that can have serious growth consequences for companies relying too heavily on them to reach their target market. Google, as another case in point, constantly tweaks its search ranking algorithm, often sealing the fate for companies for whom search is the primary channel of acquiring customers. While customer churn and loss of market share through one or several of these lapses is often quite avoidable, it's also true that dramatic disruptions, whether due to competitor innovation or changes in market conditions, can blindside companies in ways that they have little or no control over. Disruptive technology can also suddenly affect the effectiveness of marketing channels, such as with the advent of ad blocking. With the pace of innovation increasing and powerful new tools such as cloud storage of big data sets and machine learning algorithms for mining that data, now affordable and accessible to even fledgling startups, even the most powerful incumbents such as Walmart and Microsoft must learn to be more agile in both product development and marketing. Today, no company can afford to leave any potential customers up for grabs by competitors. This is why newly hatched startups and market-leading powerhouses alike are instituting growth hacking. Growth teams help to keep companies on their toes, constantly on the lookout for changes in customer behavior and experimenting with new ideas for growth. Growth teams are both active and proactive. They are detectors of early warning signs, and they are entirely dedicated to acquiring, activating, retaining, and monetizing the maximum number of customers, and even driving the innovation of new opportunities for growth. But of course, growth teams are only human. They too can become complacent and distracted from the growth mission, or blindsided by market forces and disruptive technologies. But the high-tempo growth hacking process enables them to make effective course corrections at optimal speed. This chapter will introduce some of the common pitfalls that can stop growth teams in their tracks and show how they can be mitigated or avoided. Swimming with sharks. Certain species of sharks must always keep moving to survive. If they stop swimming, they literally die. Growth teams are like those sharks. Teams that aren't constantly innovating, that aren't continuously diving into customer data and surveying, and that aren't rapidly experimenting and producing results are not long for the world. Competing priorities, limited resources, and corporate inertia can quickly swallow up even the once highest performing teams. This is a particular danger for startups once they reach a rapid rate of growth. Understaffed and scrambling furiously to serve the growing number of customers, employees have so much to do just to keep the business running smoothly that growth team members may get pulled away by those demands. Moreover, after a big push of rapid-fire experimentation to drive, for example, the launch of a new product, slowing the tempo of experimentation once widespread adoption has been achieved, can be justified. After all, in this envious situation, growth is hardly the problem. But it's important to keep in mind the danger of sliding into such complacency. Remember, growth stalls very often sneak up on companies when they least expect them. We know about the danger of taking the focus off growth all too well from our experience building growthhackers.com. It was the end of 2014, and the community was just over a year old. Though we'd been seeing a huge increase in visitors over the previous 10 months, we had suddenly hit a plateau. For 3 frustrating months, traffic to the site remained flat, and we couldn't figure out what was happening. We had stalled. Had the online community lost interest of growth hackers? Had we failed to serve their needs, leading them to flee and congregate elsewhere? Or had the number of people adopting the method slowed? On a hunch, Sean decided to look into how many experiments we had been running during the 3 months that the stall had kicked in. And he was shocked to discover that we'd run fewer than 10 tests in the entire quarter. Ironically, we had all succumbed to the false confidence that growth had been assured. Our early-stage hustle had fallen prey to administrative routine, and valuable growth experimentation had taken a backseat to busy work. Sean quickly rallied the team. We agreed that from that point forward, we would practice what we preached. We would run a minimum of 3 experiments per week. 3 tests per week may not sound like a lot, and for some teams, it won't be. But for our small team, it was a vigorous pace. And we'd always prioritize growth efforts over administrative work. We vowed that we'd dedicate time and resources to the initiatives the growth team deemed important, at the expense of everything else. With the gauntlet thrown down, we rejuvenated our ideation process, quickly building up our backlog of ideas to test from 50 to 100 and then 200 and beyond. We immediately felt re-energized as a team, and by the second week, we started to see some traction for our efforts as experiments started to hit their mark. Each week, as we flew through the cycle, our growth increased that much more. Our experiments pointed us to ways to better activate visitors who came to the site, converting more of them from one-time visitors to engaged members who were participating in the community. We improved retention through re-engagement loops, notifications, and working to get more users to our own aha moment faster and more frequently. In short, we did more to drive growth in the subsequent 3 months than we had done in the previous year. The results were astounding. We pulled out of the stall and into a rapid trajectory upward. The high point was when we added 20,000 new visitors within 2 weeks, and then ultimately increased our site traffic by 76% in that quarter, nearly doubling where we had started from. During this time, we made no extra investment in paid traffic or ads. The results came 100% from running cycle after cycle of growth hacking process as fast as we could, learning what worked and then doubling down on those winning tests to drive even more growth. After this renewed push, we have settled into a steady and vigorous, if somewhat less intense, testing schedule most of the time, with periods of more rapid tempo when launching new initiatives, such as new software or a new marketing test. Such ebb and flow is to be expected, but the key is to stay on top of growth metrics rigorously, and to constantly ask if the team is slowing down for a valid reason, or if complacency is creeping in. If it's the latter, the team needs to pick up the experimentation pace immediately. Don't underestimate the power of doubling down. Another reason that growth teams can slide into complacency is that they think they've reached the limit of the results they can generate from their growth levers. Yet before a team moves on to a new initiative They should push themselves to find new ways to make the most out of the channels and tactics that have already proven successful. Teams can leave lots of growth on the table by not doubling down on successes. Brian Balfour and Andrew Chen describe the way teams should push more and more on levers they've had success with as being like the strategy for playing the board game Battleship. When you have made a first hit in looking for the ships hidden on your opponent's board, you become a heat-seeking missile in going after that ship, calling out more and more spaces in the same vicinity until you sink it. Growth teams want to be just as intense in pursuing their hits and pressing on to get the most out of every avenue of success. At Growth Hackers, for example, the launch of our email newsletter, which highlights the top posts of every week, was an important early success in driving readership. We could see it in our analytics clear as day. Each week, we saw a flood of users come back to the site to read the articles. Yet, we didn't declare victory and hang up our hats. We focused intensively on ways to make it an even more powerful driver of growth. For example, we experimented with moving the sign-up form for the newsletter from the bottom of the landing page to the top, which, as we recounted before, drove a 700% increase in signups, massively boosting the size of our email list, which would go on to pay dividends each and every week. Then, we asked ourselves, how could we get even more from this optimization to really max out our email marketing opportunity? So we redesigned the process of creating a growthhackers.com user account, adding a step to get people to choose to opt in to the email newsletter. That experiment added another 22% to our email signups. But we weren't done. We knew the results were too good to abandon this line of experimentation just yet. We suspected that the email signup form wasn't as alluring as it could be, and hypothesized that even more users might sign up if they were told how popular the newsletter was, a perfect example of the principle of social proof you heard about in the last chapter. So we designed a new signup bar with a more prominent call to action, encouraging users to sign up with the line, "Join more than 60,000 growth professionals from Twitter, Facebook, Google, Uber, and more who get our best content each week." That experiment resulted in an additional 44% increase in signups. In short, when growth teams hit on something that works, they should invest in getting the most out of it, rather than moving on to the next battleground. Doubling down is a powerful way to stack one growth win on top of another. Mining deeper for data gold. Growth teams may also come to, incorrectly, think they've reached the limit of results they can generate from a certain lever when they have tapped out the potential of the pool of data they have access to. In such cases, teams must consider investing the time and money into creating a more comprehensive data bank by ramping up on their analytics capabilities, as advised earlier. Recall that after nearly a year of operation, the Facebook growth team ceased all experimentation, and for a full month, January of 2009, invested in improving their analytics tracking, which allowed them to perform more refined and powerful data analyses. That was done in specific response to the dwindling number of ideas the team was coming up with for driving growth. By investing in deeper analytics insights, the team was able to better track and measure how Facebook users moved from page to page on the site. The new data unearthed a rich new vein of potential experiments for the team to try, fueling growth that propelled the company ever higher. To determine where to dig deeper for data, growth teams should review each of the major tasks and pathways customers and users take to reach the aha moment of the product. Within each of these key tasks and experiences, the growth team should identify gaps in their data, or areas where it is thinner or less granular than in other places, and work to fortify it. A growth team for a fashion brand, for example, might ask if they can identify how many images of a piece of clothing a visitor looks at before adding it to a shopping cart, or whether they can calculate how much time it takes a customer to fill out each field when inputting their shipping information. By enhancing their data system to allow for these queries, the team may find that customers who view 4 images of an item of clothing add it to the cart 50% of the time, compared with only 20% of the time when they view 2 images or less. This more nuanced insight should lead them to a host of new growth experiments, such as adding more photos for each item, or improving how easy it is to view and navigate through multiple product shots. Beyond patching data gaps about product use and customer behavior, the team should also ask if it has the requisite analysis skills to make the most of the data at hand. If the growth team has been working without a dedicated data analyst or data scientist, the company should consider hiring or moving one over to work with the team full-time. Dive into new channels. In Chapter 5, we discussed how focusing on one or two channels for acquiring new customers is optimal at the beginning of the process for driving growth, but that over time, teams should experiment with adding new channels. This can be a powerful way not only to reach even higher levels of growth, but also to escape the danger of growth stalls that can occur when a channel suddenly changes the rules of the game, as we've said can happen with Facebook or Google. If teams have reached an impasse where additional ideas are hard to come by within existing channels, this is a sign that experimenting with new channels is a good move to try. For example, for a company that has been reliant solely on paid acquisition, the growth team should experiment with developing organic channels, such as search engine optimization, content marketing, or social media marketing to complement the paid efforts. Overlooking or disregarding organic channels of growth is another pitfall growth teams often fall into. Paid marketing is so easy to implement that it can sometimes weaken the resolve to seek more innovative solutions. In addition, organic growth channels generally take longer to generate results, which can lead teams to deprioritize them in favor of the faster paid channels. But organic channels can turn into crucial long-term growth drivers. For example, search engine optimization has been a critical component of growth for companies like TripAdvisor, Yelp, Zillow, and more. They did not start with the massive search advantages they now each have. Their teams experimented intensively in order to achieve that success. Open up the ideation process. Often, the best remedy for a growth team that is stalled or is coming up short on ideas is bringing in a fresh perspective. Inviting people from other departments, teams, and individuals to contribute to the ideation process can produce a wealth of creative new ideas. Recall that at Growth Hackers, we opened up the ideation process to the entire company, then to our board of directors and trusted advisors, and then to members of the community. And in fact, several of the most successful experiments run by the team were suggested by one of our outside advisors, such as changes to our site that improved our position in Google search results for key terms. Teams can seek such cross-fertilization of ideas in many ways. Ankur Patel, principal growth hacking lead at Microsoft, regularly brings together product managers, engineers, and designers from different teams at Microsoft to share new thinking and insights to spur bursts of new ideas for his team to test. At Science, a startup incubator where I worked, information about winning experiments that one startup had tried were shared so others could also consider them. Taking moonshots. One of the biggest challenges for companies in continuing to pursue growth is breaking out of the bounds of currently successful ways of operating. The if it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality. Growth teams can play a crucial role in helping companies think out of the proverbial box, to break the mold and find ways to go beyond what's not broke, to in fact find something that works better. A good place to start is by testing significant redesigns of features or of the company's marketing or products that have been successful, to see if they might not be substantially re-envisioned. Teams can start relatively small by challenging whether features or screens that seem to have been optimized might not be even more effective if overhauled. Think of this as the principle of pushing past the plateau of a local maximum. A local maximum is defined as the highest value in a current set of points, but not the highest point overall. For example, running experiments on the same pricing page over the course of a year can lead you to a local maximum for the performance of that pricing page. But for even higher performance, the team should eventually experiment with a whole new style of pricing page. Getting beyond such local maximums is essential to continuing to unlock new growth. A growth team should regularly schedule experiments that go beyond optimizing to innovating bigger changes. These moonshot bets are a company's best defense against the incremental thinking about innovation that so often leads to growth stalls. Of course, these larger efforts generally take longer to prepare. The best approach is to slate big swings in between incremental optimizations. Recall how Pinterest's CopyTune machine learning optimization software represented a massive leap beyond simple A/B testing to engage millions more users. Similarly, when Uber decided to make the radical move of testing a flat fee per ride version of its service, rather than the variable rates depending on the demand for cars, which at the time of this recording was in limited testing in San Francisco only, it was a noteworthy leap from other growth experiments. Such bold experimenting on a regular basis is vital. In tandem with continual optimization efforts, these bigger bets can lead to huge leaps forward. We believe that growth hacking is so much more than a business strategy, or even an ongoing process. It's a philosophy, a way of thinking, and it's one that can be adopted in any team or company, big or small. Hopefully, this book has inspired you to make it yours. We wish you many wins along your way to unstoppable growth. This is Morgan Brown. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Hacking Growth, How Today's Fastest Growing Companies Drive Breakout Success. This program was directed by Chris Koscheski. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Text copyright, 2017, by Sean Ellis and Philip Morgan Brown. Production copyright, 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.